Welcome to the Technology Lab, presented by CPA Practice Advisor, with your hosts, Randy Johnston and Brian Tankersley.
I'm Randy Johnston, along with Brian Tankersley. Brian, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Brian Tankersley. I've been in the profession since the early 90s, have been doing accounting technology since the late 90s on a professional basis. I've written a few hundred product reviews, and I've spoken in 48 states talking about accounting technology to CPAs.
And I am from Hutchinson, Kansas. I am so pleased to spend time with you today. I have been on the top 100 list since 2004, the top 25 list since 2011. I love to spend time in technology and with my family as well. I'm fortunate enough to have founded Network Management Group, which is a managed service provider, providing services from Boston to Honolulu. And my K2 business is how I met Brian, and it is how we've probably met many of you, producing CPE and PD in the US and Canada. We're so pleased to spend time with you on today's Technology Lab. Good day. Welcome to the Technology Lab. I'm Randy Johnston with my co-host, Brian Tankersley. Today, we want to talk to you about low Earth orbit satellites, or LEOs. Now, this is a big deal for those of you who maybe live on the outside of cities and want to be able to have higher speed internet access, or when you're mobile in your RV or your boats or those types of things. And it turns out that for many of you, you could get by, or really not just get by, but do quite well by having a low Earth orbit satellite. So, Brian, what would you like our listeners to know about these LEOs that are available in the market?
Well, you know, historically, the problem with satellite internet has been that they've been putting it on geostationary satellites that are out 26,000 miles above the Earth. And so what that creates a problem called latency, where when you click on something, it takes 2 seconds for anything to happen. What they've done to solve this is the Starlink satellites now are going to be about 203 to 360 miles up in space. So they're much lower. And so you don't have that huge lag, and you don't have the interference with the Van Allen belts and all the other stuff out there in space. It means you also, though, have to have many more satellites. So instead of being able to get away with a constellation of 6 or 10 satellites, instead we end up with constellations in the hundreds or even thousands. And currently, right now, you've got SpaceX actually has 3,000 satellites deployed, is throwing Falcon 9s with 60 new satellites on them up there all the time. So they're really building out this network on a heavy-duty basis. And the network's, by the way, being used by folks like US DOD. So DOD is actually using Starlink for some of their internet service. And Randy, you're actually using it. So tell us about your experience.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, Brian, because, you know, I think you've laid it out right. If you look at those geostationary orbits, which are typically at 23,000 plus miles, that latency just made it almost unusable with the Hughes networks and some of those early ones, but it was better than no internet access. And Starlink itself uses an altitude of between 203 and 360 miles, depending on where the position is at. Latency in my own personal situation has been between 20 and 40 milliseconds. So they promise that it should be quicker, but that still isn't bad from a satellite.
You can play gaming on 20 millisecond internet.
Oh, absolutely. And it is fast enough, Brian, that, you know, and it's got enough throughput that you can readily stream video, transfer large files, and all that type of stuff. Now, SpaceX has been around for a while with this. You can look at the Starlink website to actually get more information on it. I purchased a residential version of this. And generally with Starlink, what you do is you purchase a dish and then you subscribe to some level of service. For the remote and rural locations, like I'm really classified as, the one-time dish purchase today is $5.99. I think I bought mine for $4.99, by the way, Brian. And the monthly rate now is $110. And it's only been in the last 60 days or so, maybe 30 days, that they've started to put some bandwidth caps on the residential. Up to that point, there were none. But it's gone from $99 a month to $110. But for me, $110 a month for this service is a superb value when I was paying over $300 for my Cox internet service that was going out 6 or 8 times a week. You know, I'm pretty satisfied with it from that perspective. Now, there is a high-speed business version, Brian. The satellite dish is more sophisticated. It's about $2,500, and it's about $500 a month for the service. So if you've got a remote location that needs some serious performance and reliability, Starlink Business might be in your future. But, you know, originally the Starlinks were supposed to be relatively fixed, but people were putting them on their RVs or taking them with them on the road. The Starlink SpaceX folks figured that out and said, oh, these dishes are moving around. We probably ought to charge a premium for moving them around. And so they have come up with a program called Starlink for RVs, and you can do one of two styles. You can either do the satellite that's stationary, like I use in my home, but it has the ability to be moved for $135. So they got a $25 premium on that. Now, it turns out they also make boating capabilities, but this one tends to be a more sophisticated item. The hardware costs are $10,000 and it's $5,000 a month, but you're getting 350 megabits, which compared to a lot of the cruise ships and so forth that you've probably been on historically, you know, this is a whole different ballgame. SpaceX has also made agreements with airlines to actually put in their capabilities inside jet aircraft. So the airline industries are spending about $150,000 a plane to put that in, and then they're going to be charged between $12,500 and $25,000 a month. But, you know, let's go back to the real world. For most of you, we're really talking about the ability to run a dish in your office or your home. And for most of you, it's going to be $600, and it's going to be a $110 a month, quite affordable. Now, Brian, you might want to describe what the hardware is like here to our listeners.
Okay, so the hardware looks like it's an 11 by 17 piece of paper, and it is on a tripod. What it is it is a composite antenna, so it's actually not a single antenna. It's an array of antennas, and so there are lots and lots of little bitty antennas in there. They actually, the satellite actually moves to point at where the current satellites serving the area are. You also have to use their router when you're working with the product. Now, Randy, you said earlier that they wouldn't let you use a VPN connection at this point on the consumer version.
So you are correct. The router has to be used to power the dish and to make the interface. And both the dish and the router get firmware updates pretty frequently. You know, I've watched those over the past year, and there's almost weekly updates on both the dish and the router. But there's also an oddity because, you know, my hope had been to run a VPN back to the office with this. And originally I thought I would, and discovered that the VPNs had been disabled by SpaceX.
So are they blocking, in addition to IPsec and like open VPNs, they're also blocking SSL VPNs?
They are. At least I haven't figured out a way around it, nor have any of my technical people. So if a listener has figured that out or I'm incorrect on that, I'd sure like to know, because I'd like to be able to run a VPN here. But then there's one other real ugly twist as I see it. I run my router wired into my firewall switches and so forth in my home. And when you run the router wired, it doesn't update the firmware. And I just told you that the firmware updates almost weekly. So what I have to do is disconnect my router periodically so it can do the actual firmware updates that are required on the router and on the dish. And, you know, that's just one of those oddities, like, huh, I understand why you're doing that, disagree with it, but I get it. Overall, friends, the service has been very reliable. They're probably the biggest objection is if satellites get out of position, you can have little temporary lags or little temporary outages while the satellites are moving in positions or as the dish you know, attaches to a new satellite. Now, another oddity, Brian, you know, the next time you're here, I'll drive you out so you can see them. There are downlink stations all over the country. And it turns out I've got a downlink station for the SpaceX families only about 13 miles away from me. It's very unusual. It's near a small town called Inman, Kansas. But there's actually an array of 9 surface satellites that are receiving this Starlink traffic. And they are cross-connecting then into major fiber backbones. So the place that they're actually at has all of AT&T and, you know, I'm not going to name them all, but there's
level
like
three and
level three is there. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. There's like 7 carriers in this one little country fenced in thing.
Let's just remind everybody that Randy lives in the middle of Kansas, and a lot of the telecom infrastructure in the early days actually has been routed through Kansas. And so as a result, he's got heavy duty, serious fiber coming through his part of the world. And that's why they've located this this device there.
You're absolutely right, Brian. But on the other hand, you know, the service at homes here is still fairly poor, fairly pathetic. Unlike some of our associates that have, you know, very inexpensive gigabit fiber service into their home, multiple paths, below $100. That's you. And me, I don't even have an option other than Cox, which was exceptionally unreliable. So I don't want to sound too over the top on this, but I will have to tell you that the Starlink service that I've had has been quite good. I've recommended it to lots of people, and I've not had a single complaint back, because people that are in my situation, this is the best option we've got. There are other vendors that compete, Amazon Project Kuiper, for example, OneWeb, for example, and there's more competitors coming to the U.S. market along the way. There's also competitors in other countries, Inmarsat in the U.K. or Telesat in Canada would be a couple of more examples. But when everything's said and done, Brian, if you've got a country home and you don't have internet access, or you've got an office that's a little further out and you're having trouble getting internet access, this is trivial to purchase and install. You may have a waiting list situation on it, depending on your part of the country. They're a little more available in the western part of the U.S. than the eastern, but that's all about density and how much they can actually deploy. Anyway, Brian, I think that's probably the key things. Any other parting thoughts from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exciting that this product is being used in pretty much all of the continental U.S., as well as all of Alaska and all of Hawaii and Canada. So it actually shows available. The Midwest and Eastern U.S. Shows the major part here. Like we mentioned earlier, they've got, you can actually go to their website at starlink.com/map and actually see the coverage map and see whether you can buy it immediately or whether you'll have to wait. I'll also mention to you that if you want to see the satellites and kind of get a feel for how many satellites there are in some of these things, there is a website, satellitemap.space, that actually shows those. So you just put in satellite map, and then instead of .com, you put in .space, and it will actually show you all of those satellites, and you can decide whether you want to look at the OneWeb constellation or the Starlink constellation or others, and then you can actually see those in real time where they are. I think it's an exciting tool. You know, I'm really excited because I have, this year I'm putting bees out in an area where it's a 300-acre hunting preserve, which is off the grid, no electricity, no nothing. And so I'm actually quite excited about this because I think it may give me an opportunity to do some remote access, some remote tracking of what's going on there. So I don't have to drive an hour out to the middle of nowhere every time I want to check on them.
Yeah. Another site that I'll mention is starlinktrack.com/firmware. And what that does is it shows the current versions of the firmware for both the dish, or I should say all, the dish, the router, and the mobile app. And it gives you a sense of just how frequently things are being updated. Yeah, again, Starlink themselves actually doesn't produce this information any place that I could find. So starlinktrack.com/firmware is a great way to get that. And by the way, there are lots of great sites to see these satellites, see where they're at. And even on launch, for example, on the 60 per that are going up in the Falcons, like Brian mentioned earlier, I've actually watched them position dishes over a period of a few hours It's really fascinating to see what they're doing with the birds. Well, that's kind of a specialized topic, but our goal is to try to point out things here in the technology lab that you might not otherwise be able to get an unbiased opinion on. I think ours is unbiased. I happen to be a user, and that's my experience with it. And maybe it'll apply to your situation as well. So until next time, we'll see you in another technology lab.
Thank you for sharing your time with us. We'll be back next week with a new edition of the Technology Lab, brought to you by CPA Practice Advisor.